Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Class Certification and Evidentiary Requirements Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On November 5, 2012, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Comcast v. Behrend. The question in this case is whether a district court may certify a class action before the plaintiff class seeking certification has introduced evidence, including possibly expert testimony, that is sufficient to demonstrate that if the plaintiffs are successful, damages in the case can be awarded to the entire class. To discuss the case, we have Ken Lee, who is a partner at Jenner & Block. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Lee.
Comcast v. Behrend is the latest in a series of class action cases that the U.S. Supreme Court has opted to review in recent years. While these business cases may not attract the same headlines as contentious constitutional cases, their practical impact ripples throughout the business community and the legal system. The issue before the court in Comcast is deceptively simple. Can a district court certify a class without first determining if the plaintiff has submitted admissible evidence, such as expert testimony, showing that damages can be ascertained on a class-wide basis? Okay, maybe it's a simple question if you're a civ pro professor, but it's still a very important one nonetheless. As every lawyer and law student knows, Rule 23 governs class actions. And for a district court to certify a Rule 23b3 class, which by the way is the most common type of class and involves a request for damages, the court must find that the questions of law or fact common to class members predominate over any questions affecting only individual members. In simple layman's terms, the court has to figure out whether liability as well as damages can be determined on a class-wide basis, even though the case may potentially involve millions of different members or transactions. A class action is, of course, a procedural device that allows a court to aggregate claims and decide them in a single stroke. But there is not a clear line demarcating between procedure on the one hand and merits of the case on the other hand in the realm of class action. The Supreme Court in the blockbuster Walmart v. Dukes case recently reiterated this point. Writing for the majority, Justice Scalia said that rigorous analysis of class certification will frequently, quote, entail some overlap with the merits of the plaintiff's underlying claim. That cannot be helped, end quote. And as a practical matter, it's not surprising that district courts will take a peek, so to speak, at the merits of the case during the class cert stage. And that's for a good reason. Certification will often determine the fate of the case. If class cert is granted, the defendant will likely settle because the potential liability may be crippling, even if the case is meritless. Conversely, if a class cert is denied, the plaintiff often dismisses the case because there may be no real financial incentive to pursue the case on an individual basis. In light of this importance of certification in a class action case, the Supreme Court and Walmart v. Dukes emphasize that Rule 23 is not a mere pleading standard, but that, rather, the party seeking certification has a burden to, quote, affirmatively demonstrate, end quote, that Rule 23 requirements have been met. That means that the plaintiff must produce evidence showing that the case can be tried on a manageable class-wide basis. The Comcast v. Behrend case poses the question of what precisely the party seeking certification must produce in the context of expert testimony on class-wide damages. And now to the facts of the case. Starting in 1998, Comcast, the cable television provider, began increasing its market share in the Philadelphia area through acquisitions as well as through swapping markets with other cable providers. This strategy is a common practice in the cable industry and is called clustering. As a result, Comcast allegedly increased its share of subscribers in the Philly area from 23.9% in 1998 to nearly 70% in 2007. Comcast has said that clustering can provide pro-competitive benefits. Six Comcast subscribers brought a putative class action suit against Comcast in 2003, alleging antitrust violations under Sections 1 and 2 of the Sherman Act. The plaintiffs allege that Comcast's clustering strategy was not motivated by brotherly love for its customers. Rather, according to the plaintiffs, Comcast allegedly harmed the class by eliminating competition, raising entry barriers that deterred potential competitors, and increasing prices for cable customers. And if there's one thing Americans want, they want their MTV at very low prices. Plaintiffs sought to certify a class of all Comcast cable TV subscribers since 1999 who purchased non-basic programming in the Philly area. Notably, the plaintiffs offered four theories as to why Comcast's clustering strategy was supposedly anti-competitive. The court ultimately rejected all of those theories except one. The one theory that was allowed to proceed was that clustering deterred other potential competitors, such as RCN, from entering the market. One of the key issues during the certification stage was whether plaintiffs had demonstrated that the issue of damages could be ascertained on a class-wide basis. Put another way, do the common issues relating to damages predominate over individual ones? Plaintiffs offered an expert witness, an economist, who offered a damages theory of what cable prices would have been but for Comcast's clustering strategy. The precise methodology used by this expert isn't really germane to our discussion, but it dealt with many arcane acronyms such as DBS and DMA, all of which sound much less exciting and entertaining than your typical cable TV acronyms such as HBO, MTV, and CNN. Well, maybe not CNN. Thus, according to the plaintiffs, the but-for prices established by the expert could be applied class-wide, and common issues regarding damages predominated. In response, Comcast challenged this expert's analysis, and among other things, it argued that the expert had based his analysis on all four theories of anti-competitive effects, and not just the one theory that the court ultimately allowed. While Comcast disputed the expert's assumptions and analysis, it did not explicitly raise a Daubert or Rule 702 challenge to the expert witness. And the court accordingly never applied a Daubert analysis to the expert testimony and did not determine whether it was admissible or not. Notwithstanding Comcast's objections, the district court certified the class under Rule 23b-3. Court held that there is a common methodology available to measure and quantify damages on a class-wide basis. The Third Circuit, in a divided opinion, affirmed the district court's certification. It ruled that a Daubert analysis was not required here to determine whether common issues relating to damages predominated, because that would impermissibly involve a determination of the ultimate merits of the case. In other words, if a district court had to determine whether expert testimony is admissible or not, it would be moving beyond the procedural question of whether a class could be certified and would be looking into the actual merits of the case. One of the judges on the panel, Judge Jordan, dissented in part, saying that experts' testimony is irrelevant and is admissible under Daubert and Rule 702. Specifically, Daubert requires a court to determine, among other things, that the expert's testimony fits a particular case. That is, the testimony is sufficiently tied to the facts of the case such that it'll aid the fact finder in resolving a factual dispute. Judge Jordan, therefore, questioned whether damages could be determined on a class-wide basis. The U.S. Supreme Court then granted cert. It's often difficult to really read the tea leaves after oral argument, but what was very clear from the oral argument was that many members of the court appeared to be genuinely flummoxed by what the parties' positions were. That was caused in part because the briefs submitted by the parties were like two ships passing in the night. The brief submitted by the respondents, the plaintiffs, focused mainly on a waiver argument. They argued that Comcast never raised a Daubert challenge below. It's not until page 31 of the respondents' brief that they even discuss how the court should consider expert testimony relating to damages. In contrast, the petitioner's brief mentions Daubert dozens of times. Several of the justices didn't hide their frustrations during oral argument. At one point, Justice Kagan remarked, quote, "I am still in search of a legal question that anybody disagrees about here," end quote. Justice Sotomayor asked the respondent, quote, "So you are not disagreeing with your adversary on a legal standard," end quote. A damning question for a case up before the Supreme Court. And Justice Scalia asked whether there is any practical difference between the standards offered by each side. He said, quote, "It doesn't make a dime's worth of difference whether the judge excludes it under Daubert or proceeds to find it simply unreliable. What difference would it make in the world?" End quote. It should be noted that two of the justices, perhaps basing it on experiences from their legal careers prior to their appointments to the High Court, questioned whether court must even consider the reliability of class-wide damages at the class search stage. Justice Ginsburg, who litigated women's rights cases at the ACLU, noted that in Title VII discrimination cases, a class can be certified on liability issues and that the damages issues can be decided individually later. Similarly, Justice Breyer, who wrote about antitrust issues when he was a professor at Harvard Law School, remarked that in antitrust cases, courts may certify the class and decide the damages issues later. But it appears that at least a majority of the court will likely say that the district court must give a hard look at the reliability of the expert testimony at the class certification stage. The court may not go as far as require a formal Daubert analysis, but it will likely require district courts to scrutinize expert testimony at the class search stage. And that will ultimately make it more difficult to certify a class, but the battle over class certification will become more time-consuming and more expensive for the litigants. As a sequel to Walmart v. Dukes, Comcast v. Barron will likely shed additional light on what burden the party moving for certification bears in terms of expert testimony. But like most movie sequels, Comcast v. Barron will likely fall short of being a blockbuster and may disappoint some.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.